Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Everybody, and welcome to Onceable, episode 72, where we'll be talking about Once Upon a Time, season 5, episode 3, Siege Perilous? Yeah, that's it. I didn't write down the episode title, so I'm winging it. I'm Brittany, and I will be your host today, although we are welcoming back Jen for the first time this season. Hi, Jen.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Fantastic.
Good.
If you want to talk to us about what we've been saying, you can tweet at Once Upon News, still working out episode 3, how to get in touch with people on that Twitter account. You can comment on this post on hypeable.com and any of the Once Upon a Time posts that I'm really trying to check the comments of, but I don't. So, instant reaction for Siege Perilous. Let's start with Jen, since we haven't heard your voice in a while. Thumbs up, thumbs down.
I give it a thumbs up, and I got to see it on Saturday,
Friday,
Saturday, whatever day. No, it was Friday. I was at Comic-Con on Friday, and I saw it, and I was like tweeting out to Brittany, because I was like, oh my god, or I was messaging Brittany, I'm like, oh my god, oh my god. So many good things. And when you sit in a huge, like, huge filled audience with, like, fans of the show and you're watching this episode with them, like, it was insane. And it was so much fun. And I really liked it. I thought there were some really great moments in there. And I'm not really sure where it's going. Like, I can't decide who the true villain is, although I have my thoughts on that. So I enjoyed it. I liked it a lot.
Awesome. And Karen, our weary traveler, how did you like it?
Definitely thumbs up. I got to watch it with Jen, actually. So that was
last night.
Yes.
I got to watch it twice, so I have strong feelings about this episode. But seeing it a second time did not change how I felt about certain things.
That's good. And I liked it. Definitely an interesting twist. And I think starting to come around to Emma as the Dark One a bit more. She's getting a little creepier, a little more ambiguously bad, which is really interesting. Kind of want to know what her end game is. I feel like we're supposed to know. Like, it's there, but I kind of feel like there's going to be a twist to that too. So we'll just have to see.
Awesome. And Kristen, who is so far away from Karen right now, how did you feel about the episode?
Yeah, like this 20 feet feels like the farthest I've been from Karen. Well, we're just kidding. She's been in New York for way too long, but she's back, so it's better. No, I actually really, really liked this episode. I think a lot of the stakes were raised and some things came about. We saw Lancelot again. Like, there was... Yeah, I'm really excited for where it's going, and so I really liked the episode.
Awesome. And Laura?
So I guess I'm going to be in the minority. I didn't like it that much.
What? You didn't like the Zelina Robbins stuff. That's what bothers you.
Well, that, and honestly, I really just thought that David and Lancelot were snooze-tastic. I just wasn't... Yeah, there were like glimmers of things that I liked, but as a whole episode, I did not like the whole episode. There were a couple little baby drop-ins, but generally I found Prince Charming and King Arthur just like give me a Dramamine. I was out. And I really don't like the Zelina Robin line too. That is true also. But yeah, so I just didn't like it that much. I just was kind of bored.
I'm really glad that I saved myself for last because I loved the David and Arthur storylines. I thought they were so funny. And watching David, like, have material was so, like, such a relief. I was so happy to see him, like, actually get angry and then be happy and then bond with someone. Like, he has been, like, just been pushed on the sidelines having this sad, worried little face for, like, 3 years. Or he's been like, I love you, Snow. Like, that's basically it. That's all he's got. That's his range. So
I will always find you.
Yeah. I'm like, how many times can we really say that? Anyway.
I don't think we want to count because it's been a lot.
I loved this episode. I thought it was fantastic. I love how the Hook and Emma relationship is playing out. I mean, it's not favorable, but I think it's a good amount of drama that we have to deal with. So yeah, I really liked this episode. But I'm on the Zelina Robin baby that I don't like that at all. I didn't like that last season. I still don't like it this season. All right, let's get to some favorite quotes and then we'll start diving into all the quests that we have to go on. So, Karen, what was your favorite quote?
Mine is actually about the Robin Zelina thing, but to be fair, I'm not into it either. It's really kind of grossing me out, and Zelina's all like, my baby, and she's being like crazy about it, but whatever. The funny line, at least, was Hook walks into the diner and sees Robin, goes, what's that then? And Robin says, it's a picture from up inside Zelina. And I lost it at that point. And Hook was like, whoa, mate. And Robin's like, no, it's up the baby. It's called a sonogram or something.
Yeah, that was hilarious. I was like, wait, where is this going?
And it's great watching those two kind of interact around technology.
Like, especially when Hook is like, oh, I can help you out with that. And he's like, I know how you work.
Stop. I know. So I like that whole kind of sequence with them. I like their bromance a lot, actually.
Yeah. Kristen, what was your favorite line?
Well, it's not so much a favorite line, but, like, I really liked Arthur, and I really like his whole thing with David. My line that I chose was when Arthur said, these people seem friendly, but they threaten everything we hold dear. And that last scene it was so crazy, and, we'll get to it. But that's basically why I chose that quote. It's just basically, I liked Arthur and everything he brought to this episode, and I'm so geeked to see where that goes from here. So,
awesome. And Laura, what was your favorite?
I had a Regina quote, and I really liked it when she was talking to Zelina, and Zelina is going on being whiny and obnoxious and sort of delusionally narcissistic, and Regina says to her, you've had a second chance and a second chance. You can't keep painting yourself as a victim. It's absurd. And I feel like that, to me, sums up Zelina completely. Like, that's exactly how I feel about Zelina, and I was glad that Regina said it.
Yeah, I cannot stand her anymore. Like, every time, I'm glad that she just, like, takes her voice away after a certain point, because it's just not funny. If she was being funny, I'd appreciate her a lot more.
Yeah, like, I feel like, you know, some other people, I feel like it's almost, oh gosh, how is this going to come out? You know what? I feel like Zelina could just easily be transported onto, like, Criminal Minds and be, like, the criminal with the personality disorder of the week versus, like, Hook for me, not Hook, sorry, Rumple for me and her and his bad behavior was very much a choice. And Regina, her bad behavior in the past was very much a choice. Whereas I feel like Zelina is operating out of some kind of weird psychotic, like, personality disorder that, like, they're never going to fix.
Yeah, that's kind of a good point. I never really thought about that. But yeah, she is a little too crazy for comfort at this point in my books. But Jen, speaking of past villains, what was your favorite quote?
My favorite quote, or I don't know if it was my favorite quote, but I mean, it hurts the most. And it hurt the first time I watched it, and I couldn't really tell anybody about it, because, so this is the thing, I see it early, and then I can't tell you guys about it, because I don't want to spoil it for you. And then Karen was sitting next to me last night, and when this part came up, I think I, like, smacked her in the arm, like, three times. Because I was like, did you hear what he said? Did you hear it? And she's like, that hurts, please stop. Anyway, so it's when they're on the Jolly Roger, and Emma says to Hook, do you love me? If you tell me you don't love me, I will let you go. And Hook's like, I loved you. And I'm like, no. Anyway.
Oh, that ED kills me.
I know, every time. Anyway, so that was it. Because I think that will play into Emma becoming more dark. If she feels that she's lost, like, the thing that grounds her, which I think truly is Hook in a lot of ways, I think that will deteriorate who she is as Emma and more into the Dark One if she loses him.
Yeah, and we'll unpack that scene a little bit more when we get to it, but there's a lot there and a little bit, like, changed in her face, kind of, I think, at the end. I think Jennifer Morrison's doing a fantastic job during these scenes, at least, and I like her the whole way through with the Dark One so far, but I think she's doing a really spectacular job with her scenes with Hook, so... My favorite quote was from Rumpel, who, the Dark One Rumpel, not the asleep Rumpel, because every time he's asleep, that's my favorite line from him. But my favorite quote was, "You crushed Hook's heart even more firmly under your impractical boot heel." Because why can't women just have regular boots in television shows when they're, like, running around doing things? Like, why do they have to have these heels? It drives me crazy. But I loved that line. Okay, so I broke this up into Camelot, The Quest for the Crimson Crown, Storybrooke, The Quest for the Stolen Relics, and then a bunch of gifts, and then some big reveals. So let's go all the way back to Camelot and get to the Ansi David, the first Ansi David, who is sort of just sitting around with the ladies who are looking things up in books, trying to communicate with Merlin and rocking baby Neil back and forth. And then all of a sudden, you know, Snow is kind of just like, well, what if we could just talk to Merlin? Like, that would be super helpful because he probably knows how to get himself out of being a tree. Because if they just start, like, snapping branches and stuff, you never know if it's going to, like, break off his arm because he's, like, transfigured into the tree, or if he's trapped in a tree. They don't know. So Snow says, let's try and talk to him. Regina's like, that's a brilliant idea. I can't believe you actually had one. I'm going to find this toadstool that I'm sure made Karen really super excited because we're on the hunt for a mushroom.
Yes. And let me just tell you that when we were watching it together, I turned to Jen and I was like, by the way, when he picked that mushroom, he did it the proper way. You're supposed to cut it off so that the root is still there so it can grow back later.
Yeah, that's not a joke. She literally, she's like, he did that the correct way. And I was like, oh boy.
Oh my gosh.
That happened.
Aww. And it's like, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's not like, it's like an Alice in Wonderland-y looking mushroom, right?
Yeah. Okay. It looks just like the ones that were
It's a Super Mario mushroom. I don't know what you're talking about.
It does. Yeah, basically. It looks like a Super Mario mushroom, but it also looks like all of the stuff in
Would be Alice. Super poisonous, by the way.
Leftover prop, anyone? Anyone?
Yeah, red mushrooms are dangerous. I learned this today.
Mm-hmm. So they get this mushroom and Arthur walks in and he's just like, oh, I know where that mushroom is. It's in the Eternal Night Forest, because they're running out of clever names for things on this show. So they're like, this was probably the placeholder name that they forgot to, like, fill in the script. They're like, oh, it's always dark there. Eternal Night Forest. We'll rename it later. But no, it's stuck. And David basically, like, throws Neil aside and is like, I'm going on this quest. I need to get out of this attic. I can't stand it anymore.
Oh my gosh. He was like baby football. It's like, yes. Mary Margaret, catch. I was like oh my. I was like, oh my God. Like, yeah. I think what bugged me, why, like, I didn't like the episode in general. I mean, I liked David later on, which is surprising because I almost never liked David. But what I think really bugged me is, like, so all the ladies are discussing and everything. And, like, and I love how they were portraying the women have brains. They're coming up with something. They're not all obsessing over guys. But I feel like they've almost overcompensated and made David this guy who's only good for physical battles. Like, I didn't understand why David wasn't, like, a serious contributor to the discussions. I mean, like, David is not stupid. So I think that's what was kind of bugging me, is like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be the jock guy now who chucks my son like a football and goes off to do manly men things. So I don't know. That's what sort of just bugged me with the whole quest thing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I didn't see it that way. I kind of saw it as they want him to find something that he wants to do. I don't think he wants to really be up there trying to brainstorm ideas. Like, he is an action man. So he kind of just wants to get out of there and be useful. And when he feels like he's being useful is when he's out doing something physical. That's just how he is. he's not a sit around and ponder type of guy. He's a let me take a sword and go smack a tree kind of guy, you know, which plays really well for his adventure with Arthur, because Arthur is at that particular moment ready to also get out of the house and get away from all the parties and the soirees. And so he decides, he's like, no, bro, I'm going to go with you and we're going to find this mushroom and bond along the way. And so he takes David into like his armory and outfits him with some swords and some armor and all sorts of fun stuff. And then he kind of gives the background of the round table in that room. And David keeps apologizing because Percival's chair no longer has his like coat of arms on it. And Arthur's kind of like, you know, I forget about Percival, which I thought was a little bit of a red flag to begin with. But I kind of brushed it off like he really maybe just does want to be friends with David, you know. But what did you guys think of the whole mythology of the Siege Perilous chair that once belonged to Lancelot? I don't know anything about Arthurian legend. So is this like a real thing?
I don't think it, now some Arthurian legend geek, namely my husband, is going to come and like kill me if I get this wrong. but I don't remember it as such. I mean, the main crux of most of Arthurian legend is that Lancelot was the most skilled of all the knights and he rapidly came up in Arthur's side and then betrayed him.
The Siege Perilous is the vacant seat at the round table reserved by Merlin for the knight who would one day be successful in the quest for the Holy Grail.
Which should be Galahad, should not be Lancelot.
Right, but it's supposed to always be left vacant.
Right, right.
So, something to keep in mind, now that David is sitting in it.
Well, but Lancelot did sit in it.
Right, so I mean, that's what I'm saying. So it's not meant to be the same thing, but in Arthurian legend, that's what the seat is for.
Gotcha.
It's called the Perilous Seat or the Siege Perilous.
He does say that it's reserved for the most sacred quest, so the one who is worthy to go on the sacred quest.
Right.
Gotcha.
But they don't talk about the Holy Grail.
No, they don't talk about that.
So, but in Arthurian legend, that's what it's for.
Yeah, which would be, like, hilarious if they actually started mixing in Holy Grail and, like, that's just... That's like Christ mythology that would come into like Once Upon a Time. And I think that's somewhere they're probably not going to go.
Yeah. So they kind of explain all of that. And David has to break the news to Arthur that Lancelot is dead in that moment. Arthur just kind of thought Lancelot left because he was getting himself all worked up over this whole situation between Guinevere and him and like this love triangle. And Arthur was like, I never wished him anything but happiness. I was sad to see that our bond like broke up because of this one situation. And I started feeling a little bit uneasy about Arthur here, but when they went on the quest and they were like bonding in the forest, I forgot all about it. So what did you guys think of the trend, like this moment versus when they're kind of bonding over being shepherds and peasants in the forest? Like, what were your initial feelings of their relationship?
I kept having bad feelings about it too. I kept saying, I don't know, something doesn't feel right. And actually, I was kind of like confused over David because I was like, why are they giving him this like storyline all of a sudden? Why are they like, it felt to me like it came out of nowhere, and he kept wanting to be something greater than what he already was, which in my mind is pretty awesome. I mean, he's a prince, like he's overcome a lot of stuff in his past. Why all of a sudden does he feel like he needs to be something more? And so I was like, wait a second, you know, are they going to like do something weird with David? How would that even work? And so I just kept having this bad feeling, but I definitely knew like something weird was going on.
Yeah, for me, I was just kind of confused in general. I mean, I know Once Upon a Time makes like, you know, consistently turns mythologies on its head and this and that, but I don't think they too often change like kind of what I would call the essence of the character. Like, you know, they'll bring in the Little Mermaid and they'll change her story around, but Ariel's not going to be evil, you know, or Cruella de Vil isn't going to suddenly be good. You know, it's, you kind of are who you are. And I just was, I think I was getting a little confused by this sort of shady Arthur. And I'm like, that's not really who Arthur is. I mean, Arthur has kind of his moments, but Arthur is basically a good person. So I was like a little confused as to like what they're doing with Arthur's character. So I was sitting there kind of this episode going, not really, you know, going, you know, it just the same thing. Like I was getting this suspicious vibe off of him. And I just wanted to say the whole time David was going on the quest with him, like, watch your back, or, you know, he's going to throw you in the, I really thought he was going to throw him off the bridge and steal the mushroom. You know, it was just, it was a weird, weird thing for me.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
Well, I think that part of it was that something about the way he referred to Lancelot and the stuff with Guinevere, I almost don't think that that's what happened with Lancelot and Arthur. I think there was more to it. And that's the part, I think, because there was something about the way he was talking about Guinevere and Lancelot that made me think, I don't think that's the truth. Like, the way he was talking about it, it was, he kind of would just blow it off. And I don't know, there was something about that conversation that tipped me off that Arthur wasn't quite what we thought he was. So that's kind of where I was on it. And then in the forest, even though they're bonding and stuff, I was like, oh, look, they have their bromance. But there were certain things, again, that led me to believe that Arthur wasn't being truthful about things, or that he was being deceptively kind to kind of lure David in to give him more information than what he had.
Yeah, I'm like picking this up more in retrospect, I think, because as I was watching the episode, I was like all for this, like, you know, bonding quest. And then now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, well, but I could be just because I know the ending of the episode. Because like Laura was kind of saying, like Arthur, like the way his character is, like maybe he really thought that that's how the situation with Lancelot went, you know? And like, even though we kind of already knew that Lancelot and him were not on the best of terms or anything, but I don't know. I bought it. I bought Arthur. I fell for it. Maybe because I was just so excited about David having a storyline, because I do like David. I think that anytime that we get like any more of his backstory or he gets some sort of agency in an episode, it's good.
I'm with you, Brittany. I fell Yay! For it. I was into the David Arthur bromance. Like I was like, you know, they really do kind of understand each other. And I was really excited for David to have somebody that's not his wife or his daughter who was understanding him. Like they seemed to kind of bond. So I had totally bought into it. The first time that I suspected anything was when they were on the bridge, because I thought, how desperate is Arthur like to get this? Like, is he going to toss David in as an offering to get it? But I, again, it wasn't like I suspected all along that Arthur had nefarious means. I was just thinking in the moment, to save, you know, to get Merlin back and to figure out a way, is he going to, you know, get rid of David and then come up with some story? But prior to that, I had had no real qualms with Arthur until we get to the end of the episode. So I was totally with you.
But do you guys get the vibe that they don't want to get Merlin back? Like, that's the other thing.
I got the vibe that Arthur didn't, because he's so right. Like, nonchalant about everything. He was hosting all these balls and he's just sort of like, you know, oh, take your time, it's not a big deal. Like, he also doesn't know that the Dark One is around yet. So, I mean, maybe that would have given him a little bit of a push to do it. But at the same time, it's like, they're just kind of like, eh, as long as Emma doesn't use her magic, we kind of have unlimited time.
So here's a thought for anybody who knows a little bit about Arthurian legend, or maybe has seen the Lerner and Lowe musical Camelot once or twice. They always do things in Once Upon a Time with people being glamored or people being like impersonating other people and this or that. I'm wondering if Arthur is really Arthur. I'm wondering if, I mean, because in Arthurian legend, like Modred is a pretty big villain. I'm wondering if Arthur isn't Arthur. Maybe Arthur is imprisoned in the tree with Merlin. And this isn't really Arthur, it's Modred.
I've had similar thoughts, too. I've actually, like, haven't really liked Arthur at all yet, and I can't really put my finger on it other than he's not, like, blonde enough and he's not Bradley James. But beside that, I've just felt like he's not the right kind of, like, hero that we're used to seeing with Arthur. And I wonder if they are sort of playing with that idea that, you know, he's under a spell, like maybe it's something to do with Guinevere or something like that.
Yeah, I was actually going to say Guinevere seems to be a little hesitant around him. Not so much like she's sort of like questioning his motives a little bit in this episode. And then the last episode, she was kind of like a little, she's been very standoffish of him, except when they get to Storybrooke, she's kind of like, oh, hey, you're here. But her main focus is Excalibur. She's like, where's the sword? Like, she's very, I don't know what her end game is yet. And it could have something to do with the fact that Arthur might not be Arthur at this moment, or maybe she trapped Arthur and now she's worried about Excalibur because, like, the real Arthur came back with her, but he really didn't. I don't know, because we get a totally different Arthur in Storybrooke who, if he is this impersonator Arthur, has some big plans that we'll get to. So I don't know what his end game would be in Storybrooke if it was an impersonator, but I guess we'll see what happens with that. But I like that thought to keep in the back of our heads. That's good. So basically they both had sad childhoods. They high five about it. And then they go have to cross this bridge, which is so poorly CGI'd. Like, he falls in, like, you know, half an inch of water and then gets back up and keeps going and properly removes the mushroom from its mossy little patch of land.
Oh yeah.
And then as he's coming back, he kind of gets dragged down by these like undead knights who are just kind of like suits of armor that are living in the this lake that he has to cross, and they're kind of like the, you know, the Spamalot knights where you cut something off and they just keep going. But then he gets dragged under for good, and Arthur comes and pulls him out and saves him, but they lose the mushroom and, or the Crimson Crown. And so they're all just like, Arthur's attitude at that point, because he doesn't want David to risk going back into the lake and pull the hero card, because what good is it if he dies and they still don't get the mushroom? So he's kind of just like, you know, quest just means to go on a search. Like, it doesn't mean that you have to come back with something. And David's like, okay, do you buy that? Like, seriously, you bought that? And he's like, no, not really. But anyway, we have to go back. Like, we can't risk both of our lives for this. So what did you think about that kind of moment where Arthur, I still didn't have any red flags, I'm just going to preempt this question, where Arthur's like, you know what, let's just go home and be smart. And I was kind of glad to see someone get through to David like that, you know, like, he's like, listen, not everything is about coming back with something. Sometimes it's just about, you know, going on a journey. So what did you guys think of that whole thing? Like, did you think that Arthur, we kind of touched on it, that Arthur was like evil in that moment where he was going to drown David and steal the mushroom, or.
I didn't think he was evil, but I thought it was really odd that he was willing, so readily willing to stay and be the one on the shore and not be the one that goes to get the mushroom. Like, I thought that was odd because both of them are kind of like alpha male and they're rescuing and heroics and stuff. And he so easily like was like, oh, no, yes, yes, by all means, you go. And I'll hold this ridiculous flame thing until you get back. Like, that, there was something about that that seemed off, because you have these two males who are constantly like wanting to save people and rescue people. And that's just who their characters are. So I just thought it was really odd that Arthur was willing to stand back and let him go.
Well, on his own. Yeah. I mean, I just felt like, okay, he knew where the mushroom was. Not that he knew what the mushroom did initially, but he knew where the mushroom was. He knew it was in the never ending, you know, the never ending night or whatever it is, forest. And there's a whole lot of knights that are down at the bottom of the water. Like, don't you just think that, like,
he may have known some of those people, or surely there were legends about people going off into this forest and never coming back. Like, I just felt like he was like, hey, yeah, David, you go over there. I'm good on dry land. Because, like, I felt like he knew more. And, you know, maybe not all little gory details, but I think he knew enough that just walking across that bridge and grabbing the mushroom wasn't going to work.
Yeah, like maybe those knights who were down there had it out for him. Like if Arthur's presence was known, they would have been like, okay, let's attack now. So he sends someone else to go and get it. And then he can just sit on dry land and then kind of cross the bridge when he has to.
Yeah, see, I just thought it was David's quest. Like, yeah. David was the one who was leaving.
That's where I was the whole time.
Yeah, like David wanted to go on this and Arthur was like, hey, bro, I'm coming. So I figured he just let David go because it was David's quest. Like, he, you know, like if it had been something Arthur needed for Arthur's own purposes, that he would expect David to let him be the one to jump into danger and, you know, run across the bridge. So I didn't think anything of it until the fighting started, and then I started to get a little worried. But until then, I just thought he was just being nice.
Yeah, I'm telling you guys, like, this was, like, one of those moments, those episodes where, like, the end of the episode came and it was, like, glass shattering. So it was
pretty much.
Why I think I liked this episode so much was because I was just oblivious to everything.
It was the bromance. It just clouded our vision.
Yeah, I was just
couldn't
so
see past it. Yeah, because I had the same thing. Yeah.
I'm really glad I'm not the only one who thought of all of that. So everyone else in Camelot, after they, you know, talk about getting the toadstool, is pretty much like out of sight until we get that one scene that we kind of touched on in our favorite quotes with Regina and Zelina. Robin sort of comes up to Regina and is like, hey, you know, why don't you take a break? Like, you're getting really stressed out. And Zelina, like, she leaves, he leaves Regina and Zelina alone, and Zelina is, like, getting really frustrated, and she's like, I don't understand why, you know, you, like, I'm sitting here looking at the sister who is still getting everything, and I can't have anything. Like, I'm carrying this baby, I'm gonna have this baby, and then you're gonna take the baby away. And Regina's like, yeah, but you would not be the best influence on this child, so I'm kind of doing it for the greater good and sending you back to Oz. What do we think about Regina's, like, motives here? I think that they're spot on. I do kind of not agree with stealing a child directly from someone and then banishing them, but at the same time, Zelina's kind of insane.
Yeah,
that's,
like, for me,
exactly
so,
where I was.
Yeah, it's there. The whole situation is so screwed up from the word go. Because, like, here's the thing: if you switch the sexes on this, if it was, you know, like if, like, not that Robin and Zelina aren't male and female, but if you put it the other way around, that it was a woman who was impregnated, God, I can't say that word, by a guy who she thought was her husband, what wasn't, I mean, people would be going, ah! Like, and just to keep, like, carrying the storyline out, and I don't know, I mean, to me, it's just like, yeah, the baby's mom is a psychopath, and like, are we going to get into, like, visitation rights for the psychopath with the child? She shouldn't be around. Like, to me, it's just getting so, like, very, I don't know, weirdly, complexly not once upon a time. Like, I don't know. I feel like there's serious, like, magical issues with this child, right? And
yeah, and I also kind of feel like they wrote themselves into a corner and they're trying to write themselves out
of it. I totally do. I feel like, it's once upon a time, and not like that there isn't murder and there's divorce and there's, like, there's issue, but it's a fairly lighthearted show. And I just feel like they're writing themselves in some pretty heavy material here, and it's just not working. Or we need to have that very special episode of Once Upon a Time where we discuss rape culture, kids. Like, it's just, I don't know. I feel like it's just, I'm having a hard time dealing with this whole storyline and whatever they're going to do with it. I don't know.
I agree, but at the same time, and I could definitely be in the minority here, but, like, I kind of feel bad for Zelina. Like, I know that's crazy because she is a psychopath, but just Regina taunting her with, like, yeah, I'm gonna steal your baby and I'm gonna raise it, and, like, you're not even gonna be around and it's gonna be, like, you know, like my kid. And I'm just like, for all of Zelina's faults, which, let's be clear, she has many. She wants this baby because she wants somebody to love her. I feel like even though she's going about this completely the wrong way, that's sort of a genuine reason. Like, she just wants this baby to love her so that she can have somebody who loves her. And I would hope that maybe she'll raise the baby so that it's also not, you know, like the Wicked Witch. But there's no guarantee of that. But I just, the fact that Regina is kind of holding this over her head really sort of bothered me, because I feel like she's not doing it necessarily for the child. I feel like she's doing it to be like, haha, Zelina, you can't ever have anything you want.
Yeah, that's the feeling that I'm getting. And also the fact that Zelina wants to take the baby away and raise the baby somewhere, like, you know, away from the people who bring out, like, the absolute, like, crazy side of her. Like, she doesn't want to be near Regina when this baby's born, which makes sense because Regina makes her insane. Like, she just does not like Regina. So she's willing to, like, leave. But at the same time, I see the Robin side of it. Like, he's attached. It's his kid. And I get that. So it's just a very complicated web that they've built, that there's like, I don't see a way out of it that's gonna actually work. Like, there's gonna be no good result from this unless like a cyclone comes and takes the baby and we see it land with a very happy family and the baby becomes Hercules and then is raised and then has to, like, you know, go the distance itself.
Wow.
As soon as you said the baby as soon as you said the baby lands with a happy family, I was like, Hercules? I'm so glad you said that.
Oh my goodness. I think part of it is that Zelina is just very selfish and she's not an easy character to ever like or see redeemable in any way. And I think that's why everything makes it's that much more difficult to want to include her in any of, you know, the child rearing or anything. She's just really kind of out of her mind on so many levels.
Well, yeah, because if you think about it, like, she's such a bitch about everything. And Regina, for all the terrible things she's done, she had, like, good reasons, and she was hurt a lot. And not to say that Zelina wasn't, but Regina always sort of, like, you could always kind of relate to her, where I feel like Zelina is just crazy pants.
Yeah, because don't forget, yeah, she got pregnant to spite Regina.
Yeah.
Right. So. And let's not forget, and murdered a woman and impersonated her to do it. Like,
yes, yeah.
You know? She would
not overlook that little detail.
Deep ends here, you know.
If you peel back the Once Upon a Time layers, it just gets worse and worse and worse.
Yeah,
worse,
yeah. There's really no good way for this storyline to go except Zelina's gotta go. Like, yeah, she's gotta be offed at some point in time. Make it happen. Have we seen her since we've been back in Storybrooke?
Yeah.
Yes.
Have we? Okay.
Premiere, and she was in last. Well, she was kind of on the sideline last week, but she was in the premiere.
I know. Well, I remember her being in Camelot. I just don't remember her being back in Storybrooke.
Yeah, yeah. No, when the whole group, like, landed and they're like, we don't have her memory. Yeah. What are we doing here? She was in the background at that
time. Okay, that's fine. Yes. Because I'm asking, because as it was brought up at the panel at New York Comic Con, was in order for a curse to be enacted, you have to squish a heart. Like, somebody's got to go. So I think we really need to look at, like, who enacted the curse, and then who's not accounted for.
Yeah, I was thinking, I kind of did, like, a brief roll call, and I didn't see anyone in particular missing.
Right. But then there's that whole, like, glamored we can impersonate people thing. Exactly. So, like, would we even know?
Yeah, because that was introduced, and now we got to keep that in the back of our heads with 8 million other things that Once Upon a Time likes to throw at us.
Yeah, right. Because that came up at the panel, and people, like, went mental over it, because they said, you know, and they definitely said at the panel that, nope, somebody's got to be not accounted for, because in order to enact one of the, you know, any of those curses like that, a heart has to be sacrificed.
Yeah, and that's why...
Are we missing a dwarf? I mean, just...
Another one? I mean, we have a tree already. What the...
Right.
Yeah.
So there's the dude that, like, Granny was yelling at in the back about, like, you know, locking down the fryer grease.
Yeah,
he could. Wait, we lost the fry cook, you know?
But no, but I think the point is that it has to be the thing you love the most. Remember, Regina had to kill her father in order to enact the curse. It can't just be a heart. Like, it has to be somebody that means something to you.
Which is why.
Or the baby. Which is why. Just, that's it. Oh my God.
I'm starting to think that it has to be someone in Camelot. Like, it has to be a Camelot character had to kill someone they love, because as far as we can see, everyone we know is present and accounted for, unless we get one of those crazy, this is not really that person, it's actually, you know, so-and-so pretending or whatever. So, yeah, that's, for right now, I'm kind of wondering if someone from Camelot had to sacrifice someone, and that we just haven't gotten there yet.
What if Guinevere sacrifices Lancelot?
I was just thinking that. I was like, Lancelot just showed up again. I feel
and
like
he's unaccounted
that's...
for.
Mm-hmm.
That would work. Or if they ever resurrect Galahad, that if or not resurrect, but if he ever pops up, that would be a good obvious choice too.
Yeah,
it'll be interesting to see who they kill. Especially, well, we could also have like a splitting heart moment again, you know. Where,
let's not have another cop out. Let's just move forward.
There are endless possibilities here. But we'll get to that, because right now we have another thing going on in Camelot, which is that David, after doing literally nothing, is knighted and becomes a member of the Round Table and is given the seat, the Siege Perilous. I can't say Siege Perilous. He's given that seat for, like, basically no reason.
Yeah, for doing nothing. That was also why I didn't like the episode.
That
I was WTFing.
I was tipped off that something was going on, because I was like, that makes no sense. You really literally did nothing. Like, I bought into everything until that moment.
Right. And David fell for it. And I was just like, you're like, that the whole thing just was making me so. I was like, that whole scene, I just kept thinking, you're all smarter than this. You are smarter than this. You know, so yeah, I was. That whole scene really bugged me.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, it felt like a moment where something was definitely wrong. Like, it felt like a huge setup for David. Like, the whole time I'm thinking, he's setting David up to fail in some way. I don't know. There's something about that whole situation that was very, very...
Yeah,
like,
and he...
let's set David up.
He kind of, like, was able to get to the core of what makes David tick during their little quest. So,
yes,
he was able to know, like, okay, if I, like, stroke his heroic ego enough, like, he'll be so distracted and happy that I can, like, pull a fast one on him, which he did. He was able to, like, you know, talk to David and be like, hey, like, you know, don't worry, we went on this quest, it was all great and fun and dandy, and, you know, then he ends up having the, taking the Crimson Crown from him, and he knows that it'll be able to speak to Merlin, right? Yeah, because
he knows what they wanted it for, absolutely.
Yeah. So he's going to use it for his own evil plans in the name of Camelot, which is the theme of Arthur's story, everything for the name of Camelot.
Well, I thought it was also really interesting that they have this reliquary of all these different magical items.
Oh, like, yeah. We're going to get... That's our next...
Oh, sorry.
Our next topic. Because I figured we could talk about it when we get to Storybrooke, because, like, that's why...
Yeah.
That's why we have Quest 2.0. But we could...
Well, yeah. Go ahead. Yeah. Sorry.
No, we could start there. Let's start with the relic.
Because it's introduced really early when they take out the Eternal Flame.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have all these random... bits in the box, and so I almost wonder if we need to look closer at what was actually in the box and where it all came from, because I feel like there might be a clue in there.
Yeah, so some of the things were, there were some, I didn't really get a good look at when it was full, but when it was empty, there was like a gold apple in there. There was just some random potions, and then there was something else in there that I can't remember what it was that I meant to write down. But the only thing that really caught my eye was the gold apple. But I think that you're right. We need to kind of see what these past quests were, because basically they have this chest and they put everything that the knights gathered while they were on the quest goes into this box. So they, on one quest, they got the, like, you know, unquenchable flame or something like that. They're really running names for things. They got that.
they were able to, like, so on another quest, they must have gotten this apple. On another quest, they said that they got this bean, but the bean, as it turns out, doesn't actually exist. So everything that is within this chest are, they're little tokens for what they went on the adventure for. So it's like a souvenir box, but it also has a lot of power to it. All of these items are enchanted, and Leroy could have crossed something off his adventure list because I wanted him to steal something with magical powers, but he wasn't around. So,
man, missed opportunity. Poor Leroy.
So that's basically, that's the setup for the quest in Storybrooke. So the parallel storylines in this episode were that David was going on a quest in Camelot, and he was also going on a quest in Storybrooke. Both times he teamed up with Arthur. Both times Arthur stabbed him in the back by setting him up and kind of like playing Arthur basically the whole time they're on the quest. So this quest leads them to find, they found the chest when it showed up in Storybrooke, but it was basically empty. And the one thing that they were concerned about with this chest was the magic bean that was inside that could open the portal back to Camelot so that they could all leave. So David, after being like really frustrated in the police station of not being able to do anything and kicking a chair and just like being so angry, which I personally loved. I thought that was a very good moment for acting for Josh Charles. Like, he got to do something.
Josh Jealous, not Josh Charles.
Oh, I was going to say.
Those are very different.
Wrong Josh.
And I'm still not over the fact that Josh Charles was killed off on The Good Wife, but yes.
What's wrong with me today? Oh my God. All right. Josh Dallas got to do some acting today, not Josh Charles. He's still killed off his own television show. So he is frustrated. Arthur's like, listen, I have a job for us. Let's go. I think we bonded at some point in Camelot, so we should probably pick up that bond here. And they go, and this quest just annoyed me so much. I loved the one in Camelot, but this one, it was so stupid. What did you guys think of this quest? Like, just all, like, the fanciful, like, you know, truck driving.
Groaning, like, crazy. I was like what could possibly go wrong? Hands steer, what did he say, feet speed or whatever he said? I'm like, and he didn't tell him how to use the brakes. I was like, is there's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, I mean, God.
It was like Dukes of Hazzard. Like, yeah, it's once like, upon a time.
I was like, of all the places, like, the Enchanted Forest is the place to, like, show off and be, like, over the top. But when it takes place in the modern setting, I'm just like, oh my God, like, why is this happening? Because it sort of, like, breaks that suspension of disbelief. I'm like, when they're in, like, Camelot, like, I could imagine him, like, jumping on a horse and, like, trying to, like, you know, joust this guy. But when it's in, like, the back of a pickup truck, I'm, like, completely taken out of the moment. Regardless of what Arthur's still wearing.
In particular, what drove me crazy is there's, like, Charming or David, whatever, holding that 2x4. And I'm like, that's not going to just unseat him from his horse. That's going to break every bone in his body. I was like, that's not like just let's incapacitate him. That's like, let's maim and dismember. I was like, oh my gosh. Like, yeah, I was having a lot of trouble with that. I agree with you totally. I was taken right out of the scene.
See, well, I thought he was going to pull a Three Stooges and, like, hit him across the face, but instead he, like, jousted him with it, and I'm like, that's not gonna, like, that's, you don't shake that off, like, that's not okay. So, yeah, I had the same thought, too.
Okay, full disclosure, I loved this. I thought it was amazing. I was like, only on Once Upon a Time can you get a dude on a horse, a couple of dudes in a truck, and a 2x4 and have a jousting match. I thought... Like, it was perfect for what Once Upon a Time is, especially the fact that they're in the modern world. You kind of mix this old and this new together, and it was hilarious, but I also thought it was, like, perfect Once Upon a Time, so I actually really enjoyed it.
I would have been better with it if it wasn't like that massive 2x4. It just was like so like big and deadly and threatening. I was like, oh my God, he's going to die. So I don't know. I don't know. Or like if he threw a net on him, or I mean, I like the idea that we're trying to get the joust thing in. I get that. Like, just, I don't know. I just felt like it was a very big piece of wood that he, you know, jousted him with.
Can I also just say, at the beginning of this quest, when they talk about how the reliquary, whatever, was empty, I'm sitting there thinking, we know nothing about how we got here or why we're here. Everyone has lost their memories. Is there any chance that it just broke open or things just got misplaced? Like, did anyone look? Like, that's, honest to God, my first reaction to it was, really, that's the quest? Like, that's what we're freaking out about right now? Okay, sure.
Which was a good reaction in the end, because it really didn't make any sense because it was all made up.
Yeah, well, like, that was my first inclination, yeah.
Did anyone else think the reliquary was a room and not a chest?
I am. Sorry, yes. Yeah.
Magical adventures are in this reliquary! And by the way, it's a like a 2 foot by 1 foot chest.
Yeah, it's a little box. It doesn't even have a lock on it.
I'm just really happy that there were no like body parts in it, to be very honest with you. I was just going to say, anybody who's like very religiously Catholic knows what I'm talking about. Reliquies is where they like chop up pieces of saints and preserve them. And like, it's like, oh, look, we have Saint so-and-so's eyeball visiting us today. Like, I just was very happy that there were no body parts in that thing.
Yes, no religious figures were harmed in the making of this Once Upon a Time episode.
Yeah. And just an FYI, you talked about the golden apple, Brittany, so
yeah.
I Googled right quick. Avalon is also known as they think that's where Avalon got its name from. It's known as the Isle of Apples, just as an FYI. And the golden apple has connection to Norse mythology and
Aaron,
to Hercules.
Aaron, we're getting closer.
And to Hercules.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I was also wondering if they were going to mix in like William Tell, because that's what I started thinking about, the apples and shooting an arrow shooting an apple off somebody's head. I was wondering if they were going to go a little William Tell with it also.
Yeah, but the golden apple specifically, but Avalon, considering this is Arthurian legend, seems to fit. So I wonder if the apple somehow comes from Avalon or has any relation to it.
Well, and also, you know, speaking of Greek mythology, you have the myth of the golden apple of discord, which happened between, like, Eris, who's, like, this sort of, she's strife, so she's kind of, she likes messing with people. She threw this apple between Hera, Athena, and Aphrodite, and it was supposed to be for, like, the most beautiful, I think it was. And so they had to get Paris to, like, judge who was the most beautiful, and that's what kicked off the Trojan War. But it's a golden apple, and considering we've seen a fury, could potentially tie in eventually.
Yeah, it's, I think your dreams are coming true. This is getting too good. I'm excited for you. And
thanks.
Me a little bit. Not really.
UAT's going Greek.
Yeah. I hope so. That would be an interesting place for them to go, honestly. There's so much that they can really play with there.
Most definitely, yeah.
It's a better chest than the reliquary for them to open.
Pandora's box?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Did we already have Pandora's box?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, we did.
With
and
Hook.
It was lame.
With Hook. Yeah,
Neverland.
It was lame. It was such a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
Maybe that was an impersonating Pandora's box and it really wasn't real, so we can have it again. So they end up, this was my favorite moment of the whole episode. They go, David is kind of like, okay, well, we're not having any progress finding the actual relics, but I think I know where they would go. So they go and visit the pawn shop and they're like, hey, Belle, is anyone coming to sell in anything? And she's like, we haven't done any actual business in like 15 years. So no one's been in here to pawn anything. And David is like, okay, I have an idea. And he grabs like a little like gauntlet type, not gauntlet, but you know, goblet type thing. And she's like, that's not magical. That's like a commemorative mug from Doc's birthday party, Doctoberfest. And I didn't pay attention to anything that happened after that because I was still laughing. I think that's the most genius thing that Once Upon a Time has ever done. So they take the little goblet, and then he stands up and he's just like, okay, listen, no one's coming forward, so everyone's going to drink from this enchanted truth mug, and, you know, they'll tell the truth as to who stole everything. So this spooks the squire, and the squire runs away, and they capture him, and that's when the whole jousting thing takes place. And basically the squire's like, listen, I don't know what you're talking about. I took it, I guess, but there was no bean. And Arthur's like, no, he's definitely telling the truth. There isn't a bean. If there was a bean, he didn't see it. But they send him to jail anyway and put him in a cell for stealing. And then they stumble upon the mushroom again, because it made its way back from Camelot, and Arthur at this point has no idea what the mushroom is for, so he's lost that part of his memory. But David knows that Regina and Snow are still looking for this, wondering why they were looking for this mushroom, because Regina found a note in a book that also made it back from Camelot conveniently with a question mark in her handwriting. How anyone could tell that a question mark is in their handwriting, I don't know. But she does, and David brings them the mushroom, and they're all like, David, you're the best person alive! Huzzah! Which is ridiculous, because it just, that was the worst. Like, he felt as happy then than he did when he was being knighted, which is sad. So I didn't like the storybook David so much, except for the gif that I posted in our doc of him, like, you know, flashing his badge with his leather jacket, because, all right, we need some more of that in our lives. So that wraps up questing. Now, we've been talking forever, so let's just dive right into what we all really want to talk about. Maybe not Laura so much, but everyone else. Emma and Hook. So Emma is still trying to get the sword out of the stone, and she kind of takes Happy's axe, because dwarves' axe can cut through anything, and Rumple's like, you're being an idiot. I told you what you need to do. You need to get a hero to take the sword out. And he's like, well, I kind of have an idea of who you can use. And she kind of like goes and decides to go visit Hook, because I initially thought that she was going to get Hook to take the sword out of the stone.
Me too. I was a little concerned for Hook's well-being.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm glad that I wasn't the only one. I was like, oh, right, Hook is a hero now. Like, that makes total sense. And she kind of, like, can use her wiles to get in with him and, you know, get him to take the sword out. But that didn't end up happening. She kind of, like, enchants him to her by ordering lunch and having him bring it to her at the Jolly Roger. But the point of them meeting at the Jolly Roger is because she needed something from the actual Jolly Roger. And as they're having lunch, Hook is, like, on edge. So what are your guys' thoughts about how this whole relationship is playing out and where we are right now? I'm totally for what Hook did. I think Hook is completely in the right, and he's sticking his ground, and he's not giving in to Emma, which is huge. But I want to hear what you guys think, because I can go on about this for like another 45 minutes.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you, because, I mean, like I said last time, I was really worried Hook would just fall for Emma the way that she is now and go back to his old ways, which would be tragic because he's come so far and he worked so hard for the real Emma to be the way that he is now. And the fact that he's like shutting her down, I think is huge. And really, it's incredible storytelling, because he's sticking to his guns or his sword or his hook. And he's just like, you know what? Yeah, I love you, or I loved you, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But this isn't the real you. This isn't the person that I fell in love with. And you're just going to have to deal with it. And maybe if you, like, give up the Dark Wind power, then we can be together again.
I was really, really glad that Emma brought up the whole Belle Rumple thing. Like, he loved her, and it was true love, and he met her while he was the Dark One. So it is, like, you know, it's not impossible. Like, that had been weighing on me. Like, I couldn't figure out how we were going to work around that, because Emma is very different than Rumple in this whole Dark One thing so far. Like, it's so different, and I can see why Hook is sticking to his guns, and I'm happy he is. But I was a little confused as to how Rumpel and Belle could work, and Hook and Emma just, it doesn't feel like it can. Like, it doesn't feel like it should the way it is things are right now. So I was really, really glad that we kind of confronted that, and we kind of got a moment to think about it, and now we can be on Hook's side, and we can, like, fully put our support behind him, you know, not necessarily giving in to Emma just because that's what he, you know, he wants to, but he wants to do what's best for Emma. So that, yeah, it made me so happy that we finally went there.
Well, I also feel like when Belle fell in love with Rumpel, she was falling in love with the good parts of Rumpel and kind of getting him to embrace those parts more. And I feel like the way it is with Hook and Emma now, like, the good side of Emma, like, hasn't shown up in a bit. You know, that side is not really there and visible right now. Like, she's not, like, even when she was a little bit vulnerable in that scene with Hook, it was vulnerable with a catch. Like, it wasn't vulnerable her own self. So I understand where he's coming from. Like, I think it's very much two different things, what happened with Rumpel and Belle and what's being presented here with Emma. So, like, when he said he loved her, he loved the part that's, like, there's no glimmer of that person in there anywhere. Like, not even, I didn't even see, like, a little spark of it. So I feel like that's where maybe this is coming from, because that whole thing was so manipulative. I could see where he's like, no, this isn't part of what, like, this isn't reality. This isn't it. Like, this is almost like the Dark One has taken over all of Emma, rather than say, like, Emma chose it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and he brings up a good, Hook brings up a lot of good bullet points, where he's like, you know, Belle, yeah, she fell in love with the Dark One and they were able to make it work, but she only knew him as the Dark One. Like, Hook knows that there's this whole other person, and like you were saying, Laura, that person is buried. Like, she is gone as far as he can tell. Like, and he tries, he's like, really, like, physically tries to look into her and try and lure it out. Like, there has to be something, but there's not even, like, a little glimmer of hope that he can see. So he's not in love with the person who's standing in front of him, even though it's physically Emma, it's not her at all. And he brings up that other point about how he knows what the Dark One, like, does to people, because he saw Rumpel before he was the Dark One, and how much power he chose after, and like what he used it for afterwards. Because like, Hook has the most intimate relationship with the Dark One that of anyone, like Belle even, because he tortured, basically held a knife to Rumpel's throat and was basically like, I'm destroying your life right now. Like, and then Rumpel comes back and is seeking vengeance. So like, Hook's been hunting the Dark One forever, trying to destroy the Dark One, and now the Dark One is someone that he loved again, and he's trying to find out this new relationship, but he knows what the Dark One's capable of. So it's just, it's a very hard place for him to be in, and I think it's like, really, this is one of those storylines that could have gone like south really quickly, but it's so far, I know it's only episode 3, but I have a lot of hope, because it's been being played out so well that I really don't even mind that Hook and Emma aren't on the best of terms right now.
So I think in that moment, and this was talked about a little bit at the panel, and Jennifer Morrison said that in that moment, like, she, you know, Emma was really just vulnerable, and that was her moment to ask him, you know, do you still love me? Can you love me? And when he says, I loved you, that kind of changes things for Emma a little bit, because she had this one hope, the one thing that was kind of holding Emma grounded to her old life was Hook. And so without Hook, that's going to be very, very different. And I mean, I get where Hook is coming from, and I understand he's dealt with the crocodile and that whole kind of thing that he had to live through, and he doesn't want to do that again. He wants Emma back. But it's kind of just, it's hard to watch, but it'll be interesting to see how these two characters resolve that issue, and the love that they, you know, how they loved each other and how they still love each other and how that'll all work out itself out, because there's just, there's a lot involved in that relationship, and they didn't get to have it for that long. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was one of those, they no sooner finally got their act together than, of course, it was ripped away from them. So how do you resolve this Emma and who she's going to be, and how are they going to fix kind of where they're at and stuff like that? So I think it'll be interesting to see that play out in the long run.
Yeah, and one of the things that he's going to do that we see after Emma sort of like, you know, this is your ship, like, you can have the Jolly Roger, like, it's always been your ship, even though it harkens back to that line where you traded your ship for me. Just stab my heart with that sharp, unpractical boot, Emma. So he kind of, like, Hook is leaping into action a little bit because he realizes that any further interaction with Emma is, it's not going to pan out. He's not going to see through her. He's not going to be able to make her change her mind. So he goes to his BFF Robin, who I am pumped. I hope that this relationship kicks off and it's a great romance and we have some action between the pirate and the thief. And he's kind of like, listen, don't care if you're retired. I'm pulling you out of retirement. I need to break into Emma's basement and see what's going on. So are we pumped for this? And does Robin ever leave Granny's? Because he is constantly sitting in there. Like,
oh my gosh. Yeah, seriously. You know, and again, mystery. Roland, where are you, Roland? He's under a booth somewhere.
He's with the merry men. What are you talking about? The merry men are taking care of him.
I hope so. Little John, yeah. Babysitter extraordinaire.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm, as far as this goes and Hook's determination to see what's in Emma's basement, I'm a little terrified for Hook, because I think you can only cross her so many times before she's going to lose it completely. And I worry about his safety a little bit, or the safety of those trying to help him.
Yeah, I feel like he's kind of turning his back. Like, I understand he's going to Robin, but Robin's sort of not on the inside group, you know. Robin just sort of like this sort of like, can I get you some tea, Regina, type of person right now. He's trying to, like, you know, be, you know, like, just press when he needs to. But yeah, Hook is kind of like, he's going rogue here. So he might not have the support of everyone else, and he could interfere with what they're trying to do eventually down the line by, like, going behind all these people's backs. But I'm glad that he's, like, doing something. He's not just sitting around, and it's giving him something to do. I like when people have things to do, guys. I'm not an outsider type of person, apparently.
See, I'm thinking if you want a real thief, you find Will and ask him to do it for you.
But... yeah, we're not even going to get into that. Because
sorry.
Yeah.
Where is Will Scarlet? This is
the big giant question mark.
They had, like, they could have had a nice bromance, you know? They had that, like.
That would have been interesting.
Oh, mm-hmm. Missed opportunities once upon a time.
Yeah, I am excited to see Hook and Robin get some screen time together, though. Like, I'd like them to be friends, because Robin is not a core member of the group. Like, he's, you know, he's new, so he's still getting, he's still formulating relationships with all these people. So he's not quite at the center yet. And Hook, while he's been at the center when Emma's been at the center, because him and Emma were so close, he's not really in the, he's not the brain trust. Like, he's not in the Regina and Mary Margaret and David core anymore either. So I like that they're going to kind of team up here and work together. Like, I want them to kind of form a really good friendship, because I think Hook needs that too. So I was geeked about that.
Yeah, I like what you said. He needs that. He needs someone who's not Emma's parents or the second mother to Emma's child. Like, you know, he needs someone who's not that close to the center. So that's a good point. Anything else on Emma and Hook before we move on? I mean, I had a lot of sexual innuendo stuff to talk about, but we didn't really go there in the conversation. The conversation didn't lead us there, so I'll save it for another day.
I can't even tell you how mad I was at Emma when she transformed into the pink dress. Like, I was like, she could have gone normal Emma clothes and it would have been bad enough, but I feel like the pink dress is, like, sacred.
Yeah.
And I was so mad, because I could feel the manipulation. Like I just knew, like we already knew what, that she wasn't just going to be, you know, she wasn't just looking for lunch, but I was so upset with her when she pulled out the pink dress. I got really mad. But
so yeah, moving on from the Jolly Roger to a couple of huge reveals. So the first one took place in Camelot, and it's the fact that Lancelot is not dead. He is alive. He's kicking. He's back in Camelot to warn Mary Margaret and the rest of the, I guess we'll just call them the heroes, because I don't know who else, what else to call this collective, that Arthur kind of sucks and he is not to be trusted. So as this is happening, Mary Margaret is sort of like kind of uneasy a little bit about the whole thing to begin with. Like she kind of had this like look on her face of like, I don't know what's going on here. But then when she goes into the hall and Lancelot is like, surprise, not dead. First of all, Mary Margaret was not as surprised as she probably should have been. She was just like, oh, you're alive. Okay, cool. But yeah, so Lancelot knows something. We don't really know what. But I will say, Arthur makes a convincing argument in both Storybrooke and Camelot for me. What did you guys think of his arguments? I feel like he has, like, he knows what he wants and he's going for it. And I don't feel like there's anything particularly wrong with either of them. He's sort of looking out for his kingdom and his people. He's not selfishly ruling, but he's selfishly ruling for a large group of people. But what did you guys think of these big reveals? Nothing. We all knew Lancelot was coming back and fighting for the good.
I wasn't that stunned. I just felt like, okay. Like, it just, to me, it just was like, all right, we've known Arthur's kind of a jerk, and now we have some concrete proof that not everything is well in Camelot.
I mean, I was surprised that Lancelot came back, and I was very excited because I love Cinqua. Of course, he was on Teen Wolf, so I'm kind of biased, but I thought that was pretty cool. Although I will say I'm a little worried because this is obviously going to drive a wedge between Snow and Charming, because Charming is kind of sucked into like Arthur's whole deal and Snow is like, yeah, I'm not sure about this. And of course she's going to take Lancelot's side. And we already know that like they kind of had a thing and that it was, you know, kind of awkward before. It's going to be awkward again. And I don't know if I'm there for that. Like, I don't know if I really care that much. I mean, they're Snow and Charming. Like, they're going to be together. Nothing bad's going to happen. Why would you try to drive a wedge between them with Lancelot, of all people?
Yeah, I 1000% agree with that. I think the reason I phrased it the way I did was because this was an earth-shattering moment for me, because I bought everything up until this point. So, again, in the minority. That's fine. It's cool. All of this could have been expected. I get it.
Do you think it's possible that Lancelot is actually dead and someone else is playing Lancelot?
Oh, yeah.
That was my first thought, was yeah. This can't be Lancelot. He's dead.
Well, I don't know. Like, but it's hard to tell because it's either that part of it, like Lancelot's being played by someone else and they're trying to manipulate Snow and everyone, or that's the real Lancelot and the bigger issue is Arthur. So, I mean, it's hard to tell right now, although I do think the bigger issue is Arthur, given the rest of the things that we saw in this episode. But why is Arthur the way he is? Why is he so distrusting of others and so obsessed with protecting Camelot? Like, what does he feel he has to protect Camelot from at this point?
Yeah.
I guess is the better question.
That is a good question.
Because he knows how Merlin got in that tree.
Yep.
And I'm sort of thinking now that Percival isn't dead and that he is Lancelot, because Percival knows a lot more than he's willing to, like, really let on.
And that was a really, really bad stabbing scene last
week. Yeah.
And not only that, but how did Percival, like, look through the fire to see them?
Oh, it was the necklace. He wasn't looking for
it. Oh, it was the necklace. Sorry. I missed that somehow. Sorry.
Yeah, no.
But
that's,
you know,
fine.
What I mean? Like, there's something.
It was very, like, Harry Potter-esque. Like,
yeah, it was weird.
The fire.
So I don't
know. Yeah, it's like, where did he get the necklace? You know, like, is it just something he's held on to because, like, hey, this can be useful? Or, you know, you never know.
Because Arthur probably, now that I'm thinking about it, Arthur probably gave him the necklace and was like, hey, give this to Regina. Something's up with them. And I'm going to try to get some inside info. And then we'll have you try to kill Regina. Then you'll get stabbed, but I'll enchant someone's sword so you can't get stabbed and actually die. And then I'll make this sad, sappy story about how, oh, he died. We have to remove his thing. But really, David, it's okay that you killed him. Don't worry about it, because my BFF's actually alive on the side and is impersonating my ex-best friend. So it's all good. That is such a Once Upon a Time plot line right there.
Considering I have no idea what you just said, yes, I can agree with that.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. So that could be something to take into consideration. But we'll have to wait and see if Lancelot is the real thing or not. But the other thing that we have to talk about is, unfortunately, Mr. Gold is awake. I don't know if it's unfortunate or not, actually. Let's discuss whether it's unfortunate. So all of a sudden, the rose in Belle's possession starts to gain its petals back. And that means that, you know, Gold is coming back to life. He's waking up. So Belle goes in search of him, but Emma already has Gold's body down in the mine, or under, in her basement. It's not really the mine, it's in her basement. And she has a plan for him. And that plan is that she's going to have turn him into a hero and give him what he always wanted and have him take the sword from the stone for her. Now, I missed something, because why did she need the item that he touched before he was the Dark One? Was that just to wake him up and heal him?
Yes. Yeah, that was the spell that Belle found, and Belle couldn't find anything that... Right, okay. But Emma knew where it was and where to find it, and, so she did.
So that, going back to the Hook thing, that was why she chose Hook. It wasn't to make Hook the hero to take the sword out of the stone, it was to get the sword.
Yeah, it was a manipulation, but it was also her need to see Hook in some way, too.
Oh, absolutely. Plus, Jen is speaking for Jennifer Morrison in this moment.
Sure. Okay, why not?
I wanted to read all the stuff from that panel, but I didn't have time to actually know what she had to say about that scene. But I am really interested in because I've seen a lot of gift sets on Tumblr of her talking about it, but I haven't actually, like, sat down and listened to it yet.
It's really good. There were a lot of good things at that panel. And Brittany did the recap post, because I was literally like,
yeah,
messaging her the information. Jen's
Facebook messages put in post form.
Yeah, because I was sitting in the middle of this panel. I'm like, I'm never gonna get this out. We need to talk about these things, because we can talk about that at the end, because there are a lot of things that came up that I think are really interesting for the season. But back to this business.
Go ahead. Let's wrap this up. So now that Gold's awake, I felt that he was sort of like, you know, because he's not the Dark One anymore. He's just like this, like, feeble man again. Maybe he'll revert to being the coward that he was, or who knows how much he's learned. But he really doesn't have, like, pardon this phrasing, but a good leg to stand on at this moment.
Oh, Brittany.
I'm the worst.
But I'll agree with you, because here's my issue with all of this. Emma said that Gold is a blank slate at this point. He's not good. He's not bad. He's just sort of neutral. She's going to make him into the purest hero who's ever lived. I'm not here for this, because it's such a cop-out. The amazing thing about Regina's storyline is that she's worked so hard to become the person she is now, and every day she still struggles with that, but she refuses to give up because she's, it's a bad phrasing, but she's seen the light. She's seen the light magic, and she's like, okay, you know, this is really difficult, but this is what I need to do for me and for Robin and for my son. They're trying to make Rumpel into that same sort of person without having him go through all of that work. And I just don't care anymore.
I don't either. It like negates free will completely. Like that's like to me the biggest point. I'm like, did we like seriously? We like retconned him back to his factory settings? I was like, how is that possible? Like to me, it if you take out the element of free will and your choice, it just, I agree, it totally falls apart for me. Like I'm not really interested at that point.
Yeah, because if you think about it, like Emma had the choice to become evil, and so like she like there was a choice made somewhere down the line, and now it's sort of like Rumpel, yeah, you're a blank slate, but you can't just like say, okay, you're gonna be a hero and get everything you want. Like he didn't even open his eyes yet, and she's like, okay, so you're a hero and this is what you're gonna have to do for me, and then I have like this major task for you. But he has like, he has to have some agency over that, like, because if he knows that there's something bad coming down the line, wouldn't you try and prevent yourself from, like, I guess you can control his heart, but at the same time, it's not his own choice to be doing good things. Like, this is going to be the weirdest Dark One controlling a heart moment ever, because it's going to be like, okay, go help this old lady cross the street, or step in front of a moving bus to help this person. It's not like, destroy the world.
But doesn't that defeat the purpose of him being a hero?
Yeah.
You can't make someone a hero by forcing them to do things. The hero has to make their own choice.
And it has to be like this self-sacrificial thing. Like it's not...
Right, right. So that's the part I'm confused about. So I don't understand how he's going to pull the sword from the stone unless somebody makes him the hero.
Yeah.
Like unless he makes himself the hero in some way. Not her telling him he's going to be a hero. Mm-hmm. So I guess it'll be interesting to see how to kind of that kind of unfolds, because it doesn't, right now it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
This makes me like kind of think about who Rumpel would have been if he had never become the Dark One. Like we know Rumpelstiltskin the character, like as in the fairy tale character, and he's not good. Like Rumpelstiltskin at his purest, not the Dark One, not affected by all of that, is not a great guy. So I'm wondering if it's possible for her to turn him into the purest of pure heroes if in his own tale, without ever becoming the Dark One, if he wouldn't have been that way to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be one thing I'm really, really interested to see unfold, because there's just so many, it's one of those things, like, you know, you take one step forward, five steps back, like we have so many more questions now, like how this is going to play out in the mythology. And I hope they don't cop out and just say like, oh, it's a thing that can happen, you know. I hope they like explore it, or it doesn't work, Emma tries it and it doesn't work, like that is also a viable option, because it would make sense.
And I'm so worried about what this means for Belle, because again, cop out, all of a sudden, you know, he's good now, they can live on, like, you don't have to work for that relationship again, everything's going to be sort of like thrown under the rug, and then, you know, she's going to be like, well, this is, you know, the real Rumpel that I fell in love with, but there's no, like, payoff there for the audience, because we want to see him work for it, and we want Belle to be the strong woman that we know she is and not just fall back into like old habits.
Yeah, and that's what made Rumpel's character so frustrating at the beginning of last season, was he had that whole moment where he went to Neil's grave and apologized and like said he's going to be this better man, and then he goes and opens the sorcerer's hat and wants to steal all the power from the world. It's like there was literally nothing left to redeem him, like, and we were just done with him. It was like that you cannot do anything that's going to make us feel anything for you. So when Belle finally pushed him over that line, it was a rewarding moment for an audience member. And now this is not going to be a rewarding moment. We don't want it to be all like, you know, flowers and la-di-da for them. Like they have to work from a blank slate. But that is all in the future. And we have a few things that we could talk about really quickly. Just like five teases, I guess, that are coming for the rest of the season. Jen, which one do you want to talk about? Because you were there.
I'll talk about Henry.
Okay.
Because it's probably the most heartbreaking of all. So at the panel, they were talking about all these different things, and one of the things they mentioned, someone asked a question about the various relationships on the show, and they brought up that Henry finally has a girlfriend, and they said that Henry's relationship will be the most heartbreaking of them all. And I was like, dude, really? Really? He's like, what, 14? We're going to, like, make it miserable for him? So I don't know what context that means. But everyone in the audience was like, no. So that's the one that I am most curious to see, because he met the girl, you know, clearly in Camelot, and now they've met again here in Storybrooke. And he's all about the music and the mixtapes and all that, you know, being dorky with her, which is adorable. So I don't know where that will go next, but it doesn't sound like it ends well for our lovely Henry, the writer.
And when you think of all the heartbreak going on, like, I'm sorry, Hook and Emma, and you've got the whole Regina and Robin thing, which isn't so bad anymore, but, like, that's going to be the most heartbreaking? Really?
Yeah, like, really? What could possibly happen?
Exactly. Like, I'm very, very nervous for poor Henry.
Me too. Like, I'm highly concerned. But yeah, so that was, like, one of the things. I'm like, wait, what? How? What? And this was from one of the writers, or, yeah, one of the creators. It's from Eddie. So I'm just like, oh, no, no good can come of this. And he was, like, gleeful about it, which even makes it more scary.
Yeah.
It's going to be like Emma 2.0. Like, if Violet dies, it's going to be like, well, I can't love anyone because everyone who gets close to me dies. The thing I am most excited about is that in November, I'm not excited recapping-wise, but I'm excited because in November, we're getting a two-hour episode, and part of those 2 hours is going to be all about Ruby, Mulan, and Merida. So, very pumped.
They go a questing together.
They go a questing.
So that ought to be awesome. And we get to see Ruby again, which we haven't seen her in forever. So that'll be cool.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that a lot. I can't really remember what else there was. There's the Hook getting a new... Oh, Hook! Yeah.
Forgot all the backstory of Hook? Is it all coming back to you?
We're going to see baby Hook and Hook's dad. I am actually now super pumped that I just remembered that that's the thing that's going to happen on Once Upon a Time. So yeah, they are casting Hook's father right now, and they are already cast the little kid, but it hasn't been announced, right, Jen?
It's too bad they're going to call him Killian and not Baby Hook.
Yeah.
So yeah, they are in the process of, they told us there would be a whole section of backstory way back in Hook's past when he was a little boy. So we'll get little boy Hook and we'll get daddy Hook. And we've seen Hook's brother, and
I was going to say, he'll probably be around too.
He'll probably be around as well. So it'll be interesting to see, and they haven't cast anyone, I don't think, at this point in time, but it'll be interesting to see how it plays out and what they do with that and why we need that information. I think that's really the important question. Why do we need to go that far back into Hook's life?
Yeah, because when we went all the way back to when we met his brother, it was because we were seeing how, like, he does live by a code. He's not just this reckless pirate. Like, it revealed a side of his personality that was really important to know going forward. And it was how he decided to become a captain. He wasn't Hook yet, but he was a captain, you know? So that was important there, but I'm really looking forward to see what it could possibly play into for what's to come for him.
Right. So I'm wondering if Hook has daddy issues, and that's what we're going to explore there or something. Mm. Because it's just a really odd, like, because Hook doesn't have, I mean, he has a storyline, but it's not like we're discovering Hook. Do you know what I mean? So it's an odd thing for him to have a flashback episode.
Yeah, but he's one of the flashbacks that I really, really want to see more of.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm definitely not disappointed in it.
I wasn't saying
that. Relevance and importance of it's all going to be in the end.
Yeah. Hopefully it's one of those episodes like we got last season where, like, we had, like, one whole episode about Ursula, one whole episode about Cruella. This will just be, like, one whole episode about Hook. That's all I want. Next week, well, you guys speculated a lot of things, so I won't ruin it by talking about the, you know, next time a Once Upon a Time trailer that was out. But there's a bunch of people coming to Storybrooke. There's a bunch of stuff unfolding in Camelot, and we have a lot to learn. Until next time, I'm Brittany.
I'm Jen.
I'm Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Laura.
And we nailed the sign off. Bye.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
Hold on, Kristen. You're a robot.
Damn it. Any luck?
Oh my god, it's like a Dalek got Kristen.
Yeah.
Why does this have to be?
Say exterminate.
Exterminate. God, you are so evil.